Women are being diagnosed with ADHD at unprecedented rates. We are a hot topic right now, but we are not new. We have been here all along, but recognizing that we exist and that ADHD can look very different in women versus men, that is new. And today, we have the woman who is spearheading our movement. Not the one that tells us about how screwed we are as women and as mothers, but one that shows us how powerful we are and can be. Welcome to the Mother Plus Podcast, the show for too much moms who feel like they're failing at motherhood. We're your hosts, Stacy and Stephanie, two moms with ADHD who cannot get enough of understanding our ADHD brains. We know it is the key to loving our motherhood. And if there is one person we've talked about consistently since we've been diagnosed, it's Tracy Otsuka.
ADHD for smartass women. Tracy Otsuka is my personal hero right now. Tracy Otsuka's podcast. God bless Tracy Otsuka. She's like our patron saint.
Tracy Otsuka is a certified ADHD coach and the host of the ADHD for Smartass Women podcast. Over the past decade, she has empowered thousands of clients, from doctors and therapists to C-suite executives and entrepreneurs, to see their neurodivergence as a strength, not a weakness. Tracy leverages her analytical skills from being a lead counsel at the U.S. Securities and Exchange Commission to identify the right questions to ask her clients so they can boost their productivity, improve their finances, save failing relationships, and live happier lives. Tracy has been featured in Forbes, Attitude Magazine, that's ADD Attitude Magazine, the Gold Digger Podcast, and more. Her podcast ranks number one in its category and has over 5 million downloads across 160 countries. And her book, by the same name, has been featured as Amazon's best nonfiction pick. She also moderates a Facebook group with nearly 100,000 members. Tracy is married and is mother to two children and happily lives in Sonoma County outside of San Francisco. In our part one of this incredible conversation, Tracy shows us the power of being different and owning your differences. She shares with us the incredibly scary impact on women of being undiagnosed. Her smart girl story of how she had to work extra hard at school to show how smart she was. An explanation on how we deal with transitions and the two acronyms that might change your outlook on productivity. And then we talk about the Groundhog's Day that is ADHD and motherhood. You ready? Get your hopes up for this one. You will not be disappointed. Let's meet Tracy.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of the Mother Plus Podcast. I'm Stephanie Springer.
And I am Stacy Hudson.
And we are very low-key fangirling in a very reserved professional way because we can't stop. We've maybe never been this excited to interview a guest before. We have Tracy Otsuka with us today. Good morning, Tracy.
Good morning. I'm delighted to be here.
Well,
we've had a lot of back and forth.
We've had a lot of back and forth, which is a challenging thing for women with ADHD to engage in. And yet here we are, we persevered and we have so many questions for Tracy. But the first thing we want to do is trying not to get too tangential, but we want to tell you a little bit about how we started, but most importantly, how we found you and the impact that you have had on us. We started this podcast about 2.5 years ago, and it's called the Mother Plus Podcast because we wanted to find out, you know, what's on the other side of our plus, mother plus writer, mother plus performer, mother plus artist, right? We really wanted to get to the root of our identities outside of motherhood. And so we had all these conversations with creative women who'd built lives and identities outside of just being mom. But what we realized was kind of what was at the root of that was we had ambivalence about motherhood. We didn't always like it very much. We loved our children, always led with that disclaimer, love them more than anything. But the actual motherhood experience was uncomfortable. And when we dug a little deeper, we were like, oh, it's because we feel like we suck at it. We feel like motherhood failures. And one of the reasons we've been like, oh, this isn't always very fun. Oh my gosh, I need more, was based on our own feelings of we're not so great at this. And the big aha moment came this winter. I got my ADHD diagnosis at age 45 in January, and Stace got hers the next month. Mm-hmm. But here's how we found you. It was Christmas Day. It was maybe the best Christmas present I could have given myself. First, I had a giant meltdown because I thought I'd misplaced one of my mother's Christmas presents. When lo and behold, I found that I had actually wrapped them in one box and not two, I lost it. I cried. I didn't ruin Christmas. I'm so disorganized. Why am I such a mess? And a lovely friend who was there, who also has ADHD, said, okay, here's my provider's name. I know you've been trying to get diagnosed for a year and you keep failing to return phone calls. Email my psychiatric NP. Let's get this rolling. So I went home from Christmas and I'm like, I'm going to learn everything I need to know about women with ADHD. So I pop on Apple Podcasts, I type in ADHD women, and what should jump up first? ADHD for smart ass women with Tracy Otsuka. And I'm like, oh my God, I found my lighthouse. So I start scrolling and I start with the episode about how ADHD shows up differently in women. Mm-hmm. And I was like, this amazing angel is reading a story about me. It's a case study about little Stephanie in elementary school, the quiet, smart, good girl. And I was like, I had no idea. And then you said this one sentence in that episode that just about brought me to my knees. You said, these girls can't retrace their steps because they weren't in their bodies. And I was just on the cusp of finishing a memoir that's essentially about my lifelong obsession with retracing my steps. And it was like, this is why. I've always been trying to follow these little breadcrumb trails because I'm this daydreamy little absent-minded professor who lives inside her busy brain. And when I started listening, I hung on your every word. And it was the first time in my life that I felt seen, like I wasn't alone, like somebody got me. Mm-hmm. And I think the reason your book and your podcast are so popular is because I believe for many women, you were that first person who said, I see you. There's a prototype for you. You are not the one freaky person in the entire universe. And that is a gift. So, which is why we are so excited that you're here.
Well, thank you. That was absolutely lovely. And I honestly think that the difference between me and a lot of other ADHD women is I've never cared that I was different. In fact, I sort of reveled in it. And even when that meant that I might not have been included in something, like I'm always the one who gets everybody together. And then I'm a bit much and I can be intense. And when people come to me, I always joke that I'm basically a man trapped in a woman's body. So I want to fix it. I want to help them get into action. I don't want to just sit there and talk about the problem, you know, over and over and over again, and nothing changes. And so because of that, what can happen is as much as people, friends and so on and so forth, may really respect me and come to me when something's really important, I am not the person to just kind of hang out and commiserate with. It just, that's what makes me anxious. And I think that's a big part of my ADHD wanting to jump into action, which may look a little bit different because I am so hyperactive than, for example, the inattentive woman who may struggle more about getting into action. But it's those women exactly that I think I help the most because it's not that hard. And once you do it, the dopamine pops and you kind of get addicted to that feeling of being in action, right?
Right.
I mean, you have to work, you know, you can't do burnout, but when we're in our heads, man, it's such a great place because that's where all of our creativity and ideation comes from. But we have to learn how to get from our heads into action. Otherwise, we start beating ourselves up, right? Because we have all these great ideas, but if we do nothing with them, we just feel like, okay, I'm just a loser. I just have a bunch of ideas, but I can't move them forward. It would be better to have no ideas, right? And then just follow society's, you know, typical kind of...
Right, but there's that cognitive dissonance when you're like, I'm not built for that. I'm not wired for that. There's imagination and creativity and passion here.
Yeah.
And to get it out when you maybe don't fit into the mold. Yeah. And that action taking here, we've got your book right here. What I love about the subtitle is there's your action right there, how to fall in love with your neurodivergent brain. Yeah. It's not how to like gaze at your navel and just wallow in your weirdness. It's here's what we're doing with this. We're learning to love ourselves. Get on board.
Right. And that is my favorite part about you, which I've told you before, is that a lot of the ADHD conversation is kind of a victim mentality. Like, oh, that's why I'm lazy, crazy, stupid. It's because I have ADHD. Yeah. And now I can't do any of these things. Sorry. And you have the exact opposite message. And that is kind of the way I've tried to live my life in general, is not victim, but action taker. And so I just think you're saying something different. And it's one of the first lines in the intro of your podcast is, you know, nobody ever got anywhere by being too little or something along those lines. And we love that because we're too much. And I've spent so much of my life feeling bad about that and guilty and shameful. And I'm like, heck no. Like, this is amazing. And I just have your Audible book on replay whenever I'm feeling a little insecure with it. So you are amazing. Everybody listening, if you haven't heard of Tracy already, which I'm sure you have because this is a big ADHD community listening, go listen to her book and her podcast immediately.
And you know, the one thing I do want to say, because there are probably women that are listening that are saying, I cannot do this. Mm-hmm. Well, you're in learned helplessness.
Yes.
And a lot of us end up there. And if you think about it, it's all those little cuts of, you know, if you struggled in school, especially, you know, your parents telling you you're not doing it right, your teachers telling you you're not doing it right, your friends telling you you're not doing it right, your boss, your partner, it just kind of goes on and on. You start believing their crap. What's going on, though, is you're not doing it their way. And really what you need to do is figure out what is your way. You already have systems. You already have structures. You just don't know what they are. And the women that struggle the most with ADHD, it's not just ADHD. It's also trauma. And all those little cuts of being told you're wrong, you may think, oh, that's not trauma. You want to bet? Over time, it's huge trauma. And as much as I make light, you know, for me, it's all about humor. If it's not funny, screw it, right? I mean, we have to be able to laugh at ourselves, right? And I joke about it a lot. I'm like, you know, what's the big deal? You know, we can get into action. We can do this thing. But please know that ADHD, especially in women, is actually very serious if it's not diagnosed and it's not treated. This statistic blew me away, but 25% of women with ADHD will attempt suicide.
I'm not surprised to hear that.
Yeah, are undiagnosed, don't know it's ADHD. You know, probably you're being diagnosed with anxiety and depression and all kinds of other things, which they may have that too, but there's also a good chance that ADHD underlies all of it. So if they get treated for the ADHD, the anxiety and the depression goes away, or at a minimum gets better. So yes. I don't want to make light of it. It can be extremely serious. Know though, if there is developmental trauma, you're just going to have a harder time. And especially if you're in a ton of ADHD, you know, you're in your head all the time.
Right. I loved listening to that, the high achieving smart girls with ADHD, mm-hmm. because again, you're not having an academic failure. What you're doing is you're working so hard to mask and compensate that, I mean, I was a high achieving student all the way through college, but what was happening inside to me, that was my casualty. I wasn't failing externally,
right.
but I became a mess. So can you talk about what that does look like for either the inattentive or combined type, those little girls that you've talked about presenting like daydreamy, absent-minded professors who are lost in their thoughts?
Yeah, well, I mean, I know for me, and I'm hyperactive, very hyperactive. I don't know why. I'm very calm around the two of you. Normally, I feel like, you know, and I just feel very calm. But it was that constant masking of working so much harder than everybody else and thinking that because I had to do that and I would never tell anybody about it, right? Yes. That it must mean that I'm not as smart as my friends. And I tell this story often that I lived with a woman who became a good friend of mine, Leanne, and she was about 8 years older than I was, 6 to 8 years older. And I was in graduate law school. I was at Georgetown, and she had already been a partner and had worked for, I can't remember, 6 to 8 years, you know, in law. And so the master's we were doing in law was called securities regulation. And I was the one who did all of the work. Like literally, I would spend weeks, you know, creating these enormous outlines. Well, first of all, I would highlight everything in the book once. These were, you know, these were, oh my gosh, what, these were legal cases. So kind of dry, kind of boring, but I would read them once and highlight them. I'd read them again and outline in red pen and scribble all over. Then I would take all of that, create this incredible outline, like a full notebook full of outlines, all different colors, color-coded, tabbed. And then from there, I would go to like a 6-page outline, then a 3-page outline. Then I would go into these note cards. And that is literally how I would study. She would come in the night before, skim through the 3-page outline, go through the note cards, and always get a higher grade than I did. And she was very like traditionally bright. So I just assumed, oh, she must be so smarter than I was. And she was very bright. But I can tell you, I was a hell of a lot more creative than she was. And, you know, when we think of creativity, we think, oh, that means that you're good at, you know, art or dance or music or, and no, it's not just that, it's creativity of thought. So you can apply that to any industry. It's not just, you know, fine arts or, you know, musical arts or whatever, you know, art, what you think of as art. It's also how we move in the world. So we are almost always going to have more creative ideas and have an easier time of problem solving. We see, you know, they say what, attention deficit hyperactivity disorder, and it's a complete misnomer because really what we have is a surplus of attention. We notice everything all at the same time, but then we're able to say, okay, I'm going to take some of this, some of this, some of this, and then we create you know, new widgets or new businesses or just, you know, new ideas, you know, ways of, I don't know, working with other employees that perhaps no one else has ever thought of. So what was your question?
I know this is how we operate. We're like rabbit hole. Let's go down. Let's go there. That sounds fun. No, about what it looks like for these little girls. But I think more importantly is what's the consequence of getting from there to here, if you don't have a diagnosis and you don't know how to work with the gifts that you have? What if you are just that little girl in school masking and compensating and internalizing? What does that look like?
Well, I think it looks a lot like learned helplessness, right? So you either become like us, where you're just hanging on and working 3 times as hard as anyone else. And in a lot of ways, I'm not sure that I really recognized that until I was diagnosed with ADHD. I just remember always feeling like I worked so hard. I was not a good test taker, you know, like those standardized testing. I always felt like I was smarter than what I could show. Hmm. Like I knew I was smart, but I was smarter than I could show. And even if that meant I was getting B pluses and A minuses, right? Yet, it was this consistent inconsistency. So I just hated math. Like I was like Barbie. Now, when I say hated math, it didn't mean I flunked math. Right. It meant I got B pluses in math. Yeah. Okay. And so I didn't really study. I did not like it. I would do things like, I still remember poor Mr. Wong in algebra. I'd be sitting in the back. I was a brat. I was at an all-girl Catholic high school, and I'd be curling my eyelashes and putting on makeup, you know? And I mean, you just don't do that in a Catholic high school. But I was in the back, and he was really, like, I knew who I could do that with and who I couldn't. Right. But then, so I'm thinking, well, you're just not very good at math. I mean, I've never liked it. And then I took a class in trigonometry, and I got the highest grade in the class, and I loved it. And so there was always this inconsistency. Like, how could I hate math so much in geometry and frankly algebra, but I loved trigonometry? Well, with trigonometry, you have all this structure. And I'm not very good visual spatial stuff. Like, I am the kind of person that I never know how I get anywhere. You know, I've been lost in nature so many times, literally where they had to send out the mounted patrol because everything looks the same. And I wasn't paying attention when I got there and there were no landmarks. That's versus
familiar. Very familiar.
In New York City, it's a little harder for me to get lost, even though you'd think I'd get much more lost there, because at least there's landmarks and I can remember, oh, I passed that Apple store or I passed that restaurant because I noticed because it was really cute, you know? So it was that consistent inconsistency that I think was the hardest thing for me, because I couldn't figure out, okay, there are times I'm really, really smart and there are times I'm not smart at all. And why is it? And when is it? So I just kind of concluded, well, that must mean that you're just not very smart, right? And you have to work harder. I think, though, if you are inattentive and much more inattentive than me, I think we're all in, like, I don't even get that, inattentive versus hyperactive, right? I think we are all inattentive, you know, to some degree. And I think that's probably why in the DSM, it's always attention deficit hyperactivity disorder. There's no more ADD, right? Attention deficit disorder, because especially for women, and I just recently read a statistic that, so we know that double the amount of women have inattentive ADHD than men, but I just read a statistic which really surprised me, which was that they believe that 50 to 75% of women are actually more inattentive. I think we're all inattentive. I think as women, we are much more, but there are inattentive men too. Like, I remember dating one of them where they're constantly in their head. And I just think that those kinds of women that are constantly in their head, that are inattentive, they struggle more. Let's remove trauma from the equation. And the reason I say that is because when we are hyperactive, we're kind of fearless. And if there's something we want to do, we just jump and we try and do it. Right? And so over time, if you try enough new things, you actually discover that, hey, there's some things I'm really good at. Mm-hmm. Versus if you're inattentive, purely inattentive, always in your head and fearful and scared to try new things, of course, that's going to put you into learned helplessness, and you're not going to be able to build the confidence that a woman would build who's constantly jumping into the fire, right?
Yes. And that, you know, you talk about your hang up as being like, I must not be smart enough or as smart, or mine was, I have no idea what's going on. This is like a deep core belief of mine. I don't understand the rules of the game. I don't know which classroom to go into. I was writing a story inside my head, and now I'm supposed to answer a question. Oh my God, I could sink into the floor. And I'm starting to identify the learned helplessness. At 45 years old, last weekend, I popped a champagne cork for the first time because I told myself that I could not do that because I didn't understand the spatial and mechanical skills. And my friend was like, who also has ADHD, I got you. Watch me.
Yeah.
Here's the first step. Now you. I mean, like the things that we really tell ourselves, I can't do.
Could that champagne cork also be, though, because of, I don't know, sensitivities, hypersensitivities?
The
because
sound is scary.
The sound, and where the hell is it going to go? And it's unpredictable. Oh, I'm exactly like you. I don't do it. It's like, and if I do it, I wrap a towel around it.
That's how she taught me.
I had a huge fear of loud noises when I was a kid. To this day, I struggle on 4th of July. Like, it freaks me out.
I am the kind of person, I'm so hyperactive and I'm so loud. But if you come at me from behind, I'm like, what's that called? I just jump out of my skin.
Yes.
I have such that startle reflex thing.
Yes.
It's off the charts. And
mine too.
When I was younger, people thought it was funny. Mm-hmm. So this is so weird, but I just freaked out with, you know, potatoes with the roots growing out of them. It looked like worms. I just, and to this day, I don't know why, but it just gives me anxiety. But I remember as a kid, like, you know, I would be there with my best friend and her cousins were all guys, and they would chase me around the house with this stupid potato, like weird things like that, that just, I just couldn't handle it.
Right. Balloons popping, haunted houses. No, no.
Oh
no.
My God. Haunted houses. No. Never.
You know, when I was in my early 20s, I read the book. I think it's Elaine Aron, The Highly Sensitive Person.
Yeah.
And again, it's one of those moments when you're like, oh my God, there's a map to me. And it was like, again, like you kind of, as you grow, you find the different layers that make you, you, but mm-hmm. then the ADHD lens is the one where you apply it to your past and you're like, oh my God, that's why. This explains so much. And so I know looking back at childhood, it's like, okay, I've got kind of a paradigm for this now. But the thing that was earth shattering for us was motherhood.
So Tracy, can you talk a little bit, and you did this in your book, about how ADHD shows up in motherhood, not only for the woman who may have already been diagnosed, but both me and Steph, we didn't get diagnosed until after having children. And as Steph explained in the beginning, it blew our minds when we understood why motherhood was such a struggle for us before being diagnosed. Now that we have been diagnosed, motherhood for me, and I believe for Steph too, has been so much better because I understand it. But undiagnosed women who are mothers, what happens there? Can you talk about that?
Sure. So first of all, we struggle with transitions, right? Stopping, doing what we love to do, what we're interested in, and starting those things that we have no interest in. And when you think about motherhood, it's like friggin' Groundhog Day, right? It never ends. The, you know, getting kids up to go to school, you know, they're fighting, they're doing whatever. You're, you know, trying to get them fed, trying to make sure they're at school on time, you know, trying to do all that administrative paperwork that they send, making sure they do their homework at night, you know, making sure dinner's on the table, lunch, whatever, packing their lunches. It's the same thing every single day. It just never ends. And it is boring for our brilliant ADHD brains. So we've got this difficulty with transitions, and parenting is all about multitasking, something we don't do so well. And you're constantly having to move from personal time to childcare, from work tasks to household chores. And so for someone with ADHD, of course, we struggle to deactivate the default mode network and engage the task positive network, right? The task positive network, it's all about the external tasks, right? And that is when you actually have to be present versus we like to be in our heads. And that is the default mode network, right? It's our internal thought processes. And so that relates to the past and the future. And our brains tend to like to be in the past or the future rather than in the present. And that's partly because you don't have to do a lot in the past and the future, right? There's a whole lot, like there's, you really can't control what happened. You can't control what happened in the past and what happens in the future. You can only control what happens in the present. So it requires more action. I also think just managing the daily routines, right? It's that whole thing of the daily childcare tasks that just, you know, it doesn't end, right? It's the same thing over and over again. And it also might be forgetting important tasks. We lose track of time. And it could also be that we hyper, because for every woman, I think it's different, right? We can hyper-focus on worries. We can hyper-focus on, oh, I'm not good enough. Look at all these other moms and look at how well they're doing it. And so there must be something wrong with me. And the fact that I can't do these executive function type tasks, the planning, the scheduling, time management, all of that, that must mean that I'm not a good parent.
Yes.
Right. And so then we get into overwhelm because we feel like, oh my gosh, I'm just never going to be good at this.
So first of all, Tracy, for our listeners, can you recap for us what DMN and TPN, because all the ADHD brains listening are like, what letters are you saying? So can you just do a quick description of what that means?
There are two main networks in your brain, the task positive network and the default mode network, TPN and DMN. I don't know. I call the DMN the demon network, but it's really not fair because there are so many great things about the default mode network. So the task positive network is related to external tasks. It lights up when the brain is in action. It's the brain's focused mode. And so when it's activated, you're in the zone, right? You're fully immersed in what you're doing. It's almost like you've got a spotlight on just that thing. And we can call it hyperfocus for our brains, right? We're oblivious to the chatter that's going on, focusing on the future or the past. We're just really spotlighted on that thing that we are trying to get done. The DMN, the default mode network, on the other hand, it's like your brain's, oh, I don't know, wandering mode, right? It's related to your internal thought processes, and it kicks in when you drift away from your project, when you're lost in a daydream, when you're thinking about something that you did yesterday or, you know, what you're going to do in the future. But the thing about the default mode network is, as I said, it's not all bad. It's the seat of your imagination. It's where your ideation comes from, your creativity, your problem-solving abilities, and it's where you make all those connections. But it's also where darkness and brooding and rumination can take hold, right? So it is the network involved in thinking about yourself, thinking about others and thinking about your past and thinking about your future. So for people with ADHD, the toggle or the switch between the default mode network and the task positive network is kind of glitchy. And you may find that, okay, you're sitting in a coffee shop with the intention to work, but your brain decides, no, 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 this is a great time to engage my default mode network. So it sends you on this mental adventure instead of letting you focus on the task. Or you might hyperfocus with your task positive network locking in so tightly that your work hours, they just fly by and you barely notice that any time has passed at all.
You right. forget to pick your kids up.
Yes, exactly. Or that you even have kids. So the key takeaway here is that both networks are valuable and they play significant roles in how we think, how we learn, how we create. But for someone with ADHD, understanding and harnessing the power of both the task positive network and the default mode network and learning when and how to let your mind wander for creativity's sake, right? For all the good benefits, and when to buckle down and focus. It's a strategy that we need to figure out for ourselves. Otherwise, our brain is taking over our lives and it's basically dictating, you know, what we're doing and who we're going to be, right? Versus if you learn how to use it. So you're in that coffee shop and you really want to get something done, but all of a sudden you find yourself in your default mode network, demon network. What can you do? Well, what you can do is you can get into action. You've got to get out of your head, but you need an awareness first, right? That this is what's happening. For many of us, we just think that our brain has a mind of its own. And whatever our brain is doing, it's what it's doing. And we really have no control over it. But that is far from true. We are the ones that are in control of our brain. We can train our brains. There's neuroplasticity, right? So that means you can actually train your brain for good. So the real key is to get out of your head, get into action. And when you're in default mode network and it is not serving you, you need to know how to jump the tracks and jump back into the task positive network. And so how do you do that? Well, you distract yourself with action. And it doesn't matter what the action is. You just have to test it and see what works for you. Anything to break that thinking, you know, default mode network. And it can be anything from jumping rope, calling a friend, going for a walk, working out, you know, literally buckling down and saying, okay, I'm going to complete that to do. And you know how you can convince yourself you can do anything for 25 minutes. Really what
the
it
timer.
Is, you just have to start. You know, my favorite thing is you can't get this one anymore, but it's
really
now called time cubes.
Okay.
And so what I'm showing is it's a bamboo cube and it has various times on it. 5, 10, 20, 25. I have never used any timer on this thing but 25 minutes. And so what I love about it is it sits on my desk. It's not like I have to open up an app on my phone. I don't have to go find a timer and turn it on. It sits on my desk. I like the way it looks, so I don't mind that it's on my desk because I'm all about like the aesthetics, right? And visual pollution. And so all you do is it's sitting on its head and you turn it on so that 25 is now on the top and you heard it beeped. And now there's a timer and it's counting down. So there is no resistance. Well, there is very, very little resistance. It is so easy. So when I'm in my default mode network, right, and I'm thinking about all these things, I don't know, I'm upset about something or I'm not upset and I'm just, you know, creating and having all these new ideas, but I know there's something I need to get done. I will see this time cube on my desk and I will turn it over on its head. And the deal that I strike with myself is all you have to do is 25 minutes. If you want to quit after 25 minutes, you do not have to do another minute. Do you know, I've been doing this for, I don't know, 6 years. I have never quit once.
Yeah.
It's starting that is the struggle. Once we start, then we're usually off to the races. And so the Pomodoro method is, I think it's 25 minutes or 20 minutes on and then 5 minutes off. Like you get a break and then you do 25 minutes and then you get another break. And I'm like, that would never work for me because I struggle to start. If you make me stop, oh my God, it's going to take me a whole nother hour to get back into it. So when I'm going, I just keep going. And sometimes what I'll do is I'll just keep turning it, you know, it'll stop, it'll ding, and then I'll go back 25 minutes and then I'll count how many times. Other times I just turn it on its head and I keep working. But I'm telling you, I can't figure out why my brain hasn't figured out that I'm totally pulling one over on it, because I never stop. But for some reason, it works. I don't know why, but it works. Again, we struggle to stop once we start, and we struggle to start when we don't want to start.
Right. I think just that awareness, just that noticing, like I catch myself noticing now, like, oh, you really don't want to do that. Like just having that awareness of the things that you're procrastinating, it changes everything.
Yeah.
And I know, I love how you talk about how every ADHD brain isn't exactly the same, that for some people starting is harder, others it's the continuing, but just, I think having that recognition of this is what works for me and I need to do it, because you can't rely on your brain to just naturally toggle back and forth between the modes. And when I was like, oh my God, Stacey, I learned these terms, she was like, wait, TP, which one is this and which one is that? And we're like, we are, you know, 90s girls, so let's come up with a character analogy. And it was like, oh, Friends, Phoebe and Monica. Phoebe is so DMN. She's like strumming her guitar and just like thinking deep thoughts.
Cleanse your aura.
Yeah. And Monica's like, it's time to make 5 meals and clean the bathroom and let's start a business. And so we were like just having a big laugh about how, like, in our brains, like Phoebe is just like, please go away and let me sing and write song lyrics and just daydream. And Monica's like, get your ass off the couch. And so that was our analogy. Do you think that that's just ridiculous, or does it sort of work?
It sort of works, but understand that Monica could also have ADHD.
Because she's hyper focusing. She's the TPN that's like, we are gonna work on this project forever and never stop. So they're like two sides of the same. When you were talking about TPN earlier, I was like, oh, that is kind of Monica though. Like, but she's
the thing is,
active
mode. Task positive network or default mode network. It doesn't matter which one we get into, right? Usually we're going once we get into it.
Yeah, they're hard to get out. Like, you can't switch.
And so, I mean, the analogy I always bring up is, I am absolutely convinced that Martha Stewart has ADHD. And the reason I say that is, first of all, her daughter Alexa was diagnosed, but I can relate so much to Martha Stewart. So aesthetics are so important to me. And so my favorite thing with my kids were these incredible parties that I threw, because it was so fun and it was so over the top. And, you know, parents would just be rolling their eyes and whatever. But I got to do something for my kids that they will never forget. You know, those parties, like, you know, the Star Wars with the whole stormtroopers coming through the doors to the music. And like, I did over the top stuff and they didn't charge me. They were like these weird Star Wars people that they drove an hour and a half just to come to this party. But then I presented my son, each kid got a dog when they were 7, with this little English bulldog puppy. And I presented this puppy to him, you know, and I asked one of the pilots, I don't know anything about Star Wars, but my kid loved it. I asked one of the fighter pilots if he could please present the puppy. And he was like, no, the puppy has claws. And they were so odd, but they were so lovely that they came. So I baking and cooking and entertaining, like, that was my jam. Now I'm not interested anymore, but then that was my jam. And I would literally see Martha Stewart do something and think, she could have done that better, right? But it was, and she was difficult to work with. She is, I understand, difficult to work with because she's a woman. So of course we get that label, but because she is such a perfectionist on the areas that she's interested in. And of course she has this huge, amazing staff, right? So I'm absolutely convinced that, you know, it's the intensity. When we are focused in on something we're interested in, we are amazing at it. And so, you know, if it happens to be party planning and the domestic arts, and, you know, versus most people would think, oh my gosh, there's no way she has ADHD. Well, I'm convinced she does. So I think it's both ends of the coin. And I think for many of us, we have discovered that we feel so good in the task positive network that it's just action, 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 you know, and that is what we focus on instead of being in our heads all the time. Mm-hmm. I'm going to be honest. I did not struggle at all with motherhood.
Tracy dropped this bomb on us halfway through the conversation. You won't believe what she has to say about ADHD and motherhood. In the moment, it hit me so hard, it brought me to tears. and in the moments since, I have seen my motherhood differently. Stay tuned for part two next Tuesday. Until then, if you haven't already, sign up for our ADHD Moms Club. That's right, we're creating a place where we can all hang out. Us formerly gifted and talented, work hard good girls who are now mothers with ADHD and we're a little burned out. We're creating a virtual community where we can share our war stories and our successes, our favorite resources, and yes, even have body doubling meetups where we can fold laundry and do all the things we don't want to do alone. Just go to motherplusser.com/ADHD-mom-club-waitlist. Details are in the show notes. We cannot wait to see you in there.